This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The latest round of talks involving the warring Yemeni factions in Sweden ends Thursday, with the UN circulating a draft agreement that includes a post-war political framework, reopening of the Sana'a airport, and a plan for the contested port city of Hodeida. Hanan al-Badawi is a spokesperson for UN Special Envoy Martin Griffiths.
We are hoping to receive the responses from the two parties by the end of today. And today, for us, is never ends until we announce the closing tomorrow at 11 a.m.
The statement has raised expectations of a possible breakthrough to end the four-year conflict that has devastated an impoverished nation, leaving thousands dead and millions facing famine. Both sides exchanged lists of prisoners Tuesday and pledged to resume oil and gas exports to ease the country's economy. The Saudi-backed coalition has been under growing international pressure to end the conflict in light of the October murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. That prompted the U.S. Senate to take up a resolution ending support for the coalition. Jean Shaheen is a senator from New Hampshire.
This is not going away. This is something we are going to continue to work at because people need to be held accountable for what's happened. And this is a bipartisan effort that will continue.
Wednesday's Senate vote clears the way for it to advance despite a veto threat from President Donald Trump. At least one person was killed Wednesday in clashes between participants in an opposition rally, police in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The violence erupted in the town of Kalemie on Lake Tanganyika as opposition candidate Martin Fayulu was campaigning. Tuesday, police fired their weapons and tear gas into a crowd of Fayulu supporters in Lubumbashi, leaving at least two dead, more than 40 wounded. This is VOA News. British Prime Minister Theresa May has survived a no-confidence vote by her ruling Conservative Party, but it points out the perilous journey of her Brexit plan for future ties with the European Union. MP Sir Graham Brady announced the result.
The number of votes cast in favour of having confidence in Theresa May was 200, and against was 117.
The vote comes ahead of Thursday's meeting of European Union leaders to discuss Brexit, while also insisting there will be no renegotiation of it. The Prime Minister will be in Brussels for that meeting and spoke following the party vote.
Following this ballot, we now need to get on with the job of delivering Brexit for the British people and building a better future for this country. A Brexit that delivers on the vote that people gave.
Monday, the Prime Minister cancelled a vote on her plan, a vote widely expected to have been defeated. Britain is due to leave the EU March 29th. Speaking Wednesday to the UN Security Council, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called for a tightening of restrictions on Iran's missile program.
Just 2 days ago, the head of the IRGC's airspace division, Amir Hadizadeh, boasted that Iran is capable of building missiles with a range beyond 2,000 kilometers. He said, quote, "We have the ability to build missiles with broader ranges. We don't have limitations from a technical perspective."
Pompeo said Iran has hundreds of missiles that pose a threat to the Middle East region. He said an arms embargo on Iran should not be lifted in 2020 and called for inspection and interdiction measures in ports and at sea to prevent Iran's efforts to circumvent UN restrictions. The U.S. has expressed alarm at Turkey's decision to launch a new military operation that targets U.S.-backed Kurdish militia fighting Islamic State in northern Syria. A Pentagon statement said unilateral military action close to where U.S. military personnel operate is a grave concern. Turkey views the so-called YPG militia as a terrorist organization. Israeli security forces on Wednesday shot dead a Palestinian suspected of wounding seven Israelis, including a pregnant woman, in a shooting incident in the West Bank late Sunday. Her baby, born prematurely, has died. Israel said 29-year-old Salah Barghouti was killed while attempting to evade police. Pope Francis removed two cardinals implicated in a sex abuse scandal and cover-up, including his economy minister, 77-year-old George Pell of Australia, the other's 85-year-old Francisco Javier Errázuriz of Chile, accused of discrediting victims and not investigating their allegations. U.S. stocks ended higher in Wednesday trading, with investors hoping that U.S.-China trade talks will end a tariff war. The benchmark Dow Jones gaining nearly 160 points to close at 24,527. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today's Thursday, December 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. With a little over a week before Congo's crucial election, one opposition candidate is claiming police violence.
In Lubumbashi, we have confirmation that six people were dead yesterday, and one of them is a doctor, and three people today died in Kalemi. That was very unnecessary in this campaign period.
Jean-Claude Mwalimu is advisor to opposition presidential candidate Martin Fayulu. Anita Powell in Kinshasa will explain the stakes in Congo's December 23rd election. A UN envoy is concerned about deteriorating relations between Burundi and Rwanda. And Kenya's president vows an end to impunity in the fight against corruption.
You can run, but you will never hide. We will catch up with you and make you pay dearly for every coin stolen from Kenyans.
Vice President Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya. Kenya and Jersey Island signed a deal to return corruption money to Kenya, and a conference in northern Cameroon on raising awareness about discrimination against people with sickle cell anemia. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. With just a little over a week before crucial elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the campaign of opposition candidate Martin Fayulu is claiming police violence against his supporters. Jean-Claude Mwalimu, advisor to Mr. Fayulu, says police used live bullets and tear gas on Wednesday to disperse Fayulu's supporters in the Katanga region. He says over six people were killed in Kalemi and Lubumbashi since Tuesday. Neither the police nor the Congolese government were immediately available for comment. Mwalimu says Congolese authorities have been trying to make it difficult for Fayulu to campaign.
Mr. Fayulu's campaigning period has been very, very difficult from the beginning. He ordered to have one jet for his campaign, three planes and five helicopters, but the Congolese authorities allowed him to have just a jet with eight seats. The three planes and the helicopters have been denied to Mr. Fayulu. Then we got to the stage where he had to go to Kindu. He was forbidden to go to Kindu, but he carried on his campaigning. At the Lubumbashi step, which is in Katanga, yesterday when he arrived, the police has been dispersing people, firing hot water and tear gases to disperse the people. Then today, he had to go first to Kalemi, then to Kolwezi. As soon as he reached the Kolwezi, the police has been firing at the people, and three people are reported dead. Then at the end of the meeting with the people, he got to the airport. They didn't want his plane to leave from Kalemi to go to Kolwezi. He was forbidden to go to Kolwezi. He was forbidden to come back to Lubumbashi, where he should have stayed for the night. The authority wanted him to go straight to Kinshasa, but they hadn't much fuel to go to Kinshasa. Then they authorized the plane to go to Goma, where he is staying now. So this is very unacceptable for a candidate who is running for presidency in the DRC.
We have been unable to reach the Congolese police about exactly what happened. But why do you suspect this is happening? Because the allegation that has been made by Mr. Fayulu's campaign is that you suspect that the ruling party has hired some youth to try to provoke your campaign.
That's correct. But the main thing that people should understand is that the ruling party wasn't expecting the Fayulu phenomena around the country. I think they are afraid that before we get to the December 23rd elections, that Mr. Fayulu's campaign will be some sort of popular referendum. So they are trying to stop that dynamic around the country, deciding where Mr. Fayulu could go, where he shouldn't go.
What do you know about the reports that at least some supporters of Mr. Fayulu might have been killed? At least one person was killed?
In Lubumbashi, we have confirmation that six people were dead yesterday, and one of them is a doctor, and three people today died in Kalemi. that was very unnecessary in this campaign period.
Assuming that what happened is correct, why do you suppose this is happening? Is this just Mr. Fayulu's campaign that this is happening, or to other opposition challengers?
We haven't heard, at least to date, that the other people have been disturbed during their campaign. But the reports of people being killed by the police and the security services are just when Mr. Fayulu is campaigning. So I think the ruling party people are the best people to ask them that question.
Jean-Claude Mwalimu is advisor to DRC opposition presidential candidate Martin Fayulu. He was speaking with me from the country's second largest city of Lubumbashi. The December 23rd elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo are that country's most important elections in more than a decade. After delaying a new poll for 2 years, President Joseph Kabila is stepping aside. Two main candidates are vying to replace him. One is his hand-picked successor, and the other, an opposition leader. Viewer Anita Powell reports from Kinshasa.
After 2 decades under the Kabila family, Congolese voters face a stark choice as they go to the polls on December 23rd. Continuity or change? Longtime President Joseph Kabila is stepping down 2 years after his mandate expired. His departure from the top job has opened the door to a flood of 21 presidential aspirants and thousands of people jockeying for lower offices. But in this crowd, only a handful of names stand out. Little-known former Interior Minister Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari is Kabila's choice to become Congo's next president, and he's campaigning heavily on that relationship. I was chosen as candidate for the presidential election by President Joseph Kabila, he told a crowd at a campaign rally in Swahili. But Shadari faces stiff competition from a fractured but passionate opposition, including from the son of the late longtime opposition leader. Felix Tshisekedi, who is widely seen as the frontrunner, entered the race late, after the opposition chose another man as their coalition candidate. That coalition candidate, businessman Martin Fayulu, told VOA he's confident that voters will back him. However, an October opinion poll conducted by international and local think tanks only gave him about 8% of the vote.
We want to leave after us, you know, the old bad things that Mr. Kabila has done in this country. Corruption, you know, insecurity, the mass killing. That should be something that we have to make a big cross so we can move ahead and change things in this country.
But he says he's not sure this election will give him that chance. And on this point, the divided opposition sings in the same key. They believe this poll will not be free, fair, or transparent. An area of particular concern is the electronic voting machines that opposition figures have repeatedly described as rigging machines. Fayulu, who says he will refuse to use a voting machine and will insist on a paper ballot, says the elections have been a mess from the start.
The elections, you know, the organization is the worst organization. I've never seen a country organizing election and doing what is being done here in this country. Starting for the electoral register.
Shadari's camp disputes these claims and says they are confident the poll will be up to standard. Andre Elana Tundu, a spokesman for the ruling coalition and a close associate of Shadari's, says he thinks continuity is important and that it will happen no matter who wins.
If it's Mr. Shadari, he say, I'll continue with the spirit of progress imposed by Mr. Kabila. He's honest. The other will take advantage of what Mr. Kabila have left. It's a question of honesty.
As December 23rd edges ever closer, everyone is wondering, in which direction will Congo go? Anita Powell, VOA News, Kinshasa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 13th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta led the country Wednesday to mark 55 years of self-independence. He challenged the youth to keep the flame of the freedom fighters burning and also keep Kenyans and Africa united. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, President Kenyatta also called on Kenyans to help in the fight against corruption.
Akale 55. was the mood at Nyayo National Stadium in Nairobi when thousands of Kenyans came to celebrate 55 years of self-independence. Addressing the nation, President Uhuru Kenyatta highlighted the milestone he said Kenya has achieved since 1963 and urged Kenyans to embrace peace.
From a nation of poverty to prosperity requires more than a single generation, or one term, or one set of leaders. Those countries that started off at the same level as we were in the 1960s are today prosperous, most of them in Asia. This prosperity is because they focused on development and did not entertain misappropriation of public resources.
Mr. Kenyatta also urged his fellow politicians to embrace patriotism and nationhood that he says will spearhead the achievement of the government's Big Four agenda. President Kenyatta also said Kenya will continue promoting peace in neighboring countries such as Ethiopia, South Sudan, Somalia, and Eritrea.
In the election season, as well as in previous years, the growing frustration of joblessness among our youth, the high cost of basic foods, scarcity of affordable housing, and limited access to health care. The Big Four responds to these needs. It is an accelerated development agenda designed to help us achieve the social and economic pillars of our Vision 2030 and our 2010 Constitution. Through our diplomacy and our military, as part of the African Union force, we will continue the support for the stabilization of Somalia.
President Kenyatta vowed that his government will deal with corrupt individuals. He asked Kenyans to report all corruption cases to the government. Mr. Kenyatta also called the country's judiciary to ensure it does not protect impunity.
You can run, but you will never hide. We will catch up with you and make you pay dearly for every coin stolen from Kenyans. Individuals who may have thought they were untouchable are now facing the full force of the law. I am calling once again for our judiciary to ensure that its procedures are not used to protect impunity.
In attendance were opposition leaders Raila Odinga, Musalia Mudavadi, Kalonzo Musyoka, and Moses Wetangula, among other diplomats. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Kenyan officials on Tuesday this week signed an agreement with Jersey, an island off the coast of France, that will pave the way for the return to Kenya of about $5 million US dollars stolen from government coffers. The deal is known as the Framework for Return of Assets from Corruption and Crime. Rael Ombuo reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's Attorney General Paul Kihara Kariuki and the External Affairs Minister from the government of Jersey, Senator Ian Ghost, signed the deal in Nairobi as part of Kenya's ongoing efforts to crack down on corruption. In March of last year, the two governments signed a preliminary asset-sharing agreement that sought to ensure that the stolen funds would be sent back to Kenya. Ghost said that the deal was aimed at strengthening cooperation and will prevent, identify and control illicit financial flows.
We are transparent in what we do in financial services and we meet the highest international standard. But that's not good enough. We also want to partner with countries, and today we're partnering with Kenya to make sure that if Jersey in the past has been used for the proceeds of crime, that we will work together and ensure that those proceeds are repatriated for the benefit of communities in those countries.
The agreement between Kenya and Jersey follows similar agreements that Kenya has made with Britain and Switzerland. Kenya and Jersey say the treaty will allow Kenya to recover approximately $5 million worth of assets hidden in accounts on the island. Kenya's Kihara said steps are in place to ensure that the money is used lawfully and put to good use.
These proceeds will make a lot of change, building, say, a hospital where health facilities are not so easily accessible.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, who is in his final term, has intensified a war on corruption. In June, Kenyatta announced that all public servants will undergo a compulsory lifestyle audit to account for the sources of their income and assets. He said corruption will not be tolerated. This week, a number of high-level Kenyan officials were arrested, arraigned in court, and charged with various corruption-related charges. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region says he's concerned about the rapidly deteriorating relations between Burundi and Rwanda. Saïd Genet made the comment during the launch of a joint project by the International Conference for the Great Lakes region and the European Union on Peace and Security in the region. This comes after Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza accused Rwanda of being an enemy of Burundi. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Mr. Saïd Genet raised the concerns over the current state of relations and the deteriorating security situation between Burundi and Rwanda, despite efforts being made to normalize the relations between the two East African countries.
It has been a source of concern to me, as Special Envoy of the Secretary General for the Great Lakes. Deficit of trust in the region remains one key issue. We should take some initiatives to try to improve some relations between the countries of the region, notably between Rwanda and Burundi. There have been some efforts, but these efforts have not been successful so far.
In a letter dated 4th December and addressed to the Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza called for an urgent East African Community Extraordinary Summit to clear up issues related to the conflict between the two countries. In the same letter, President Nkurunziza said that Rwanda is now considered as an enemy of the state. Zakari Muita Muburi is the Secretary General of the International Conference for the Great Lakes Region, an intergovernmental organization of African countries.
Although the region still faces daunting peace and security challenges, it is certainly much better than it was when ICGLR was created a dozen years ago. Unfortunately, the main exception is Burundi and Rwanda, who do not as yet enjoy cordial relations, and we urge member states as well as partners that the existing tension between these two neighboring states be urgently handled before they escalate any further.
The Joint European Union and the International Conference for the Great Lakes Region Project, which was launched in Bujumbura, is aimed at contributing to peace and stability in the Great Lakes region. Saïd Genet, the UN Secretary General Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region, says that political will is essential to address the challenges in the region.
The root causes of conflict in the Great Lakes region have not been fully addressed. Strong political will continues to be required in order to advance the implementation of the commitments of the member states of the Great Lakes region.
Relations between Burundi and Rwanda have deteriorated dramatically since 2015, after Burundi accused Rwanda of preparing and supervising the 2015 failed coup to oust President Pierre Nkurunziza. In return, Rwanda accuses Burundi of sheltering the FDLR rebels, who are accused by Rwandan government of carrying out the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Africans who have the blood disorder known as sickle cell anemia met this week in the northern Cameroon town of Garoua to step up an awareness campaign to end discrimination and abuse that sickle cell patients endure. Moki Edwin Kizeka reports from Garoua.
100 people with sickle cell from Cameroon and five other African countries sit and talk at the Garoua Market Square in northern Cameroon. They say their aim is to educate people about sickle cell, an inherited, generally incurable disease that causes tiredness, swelling of the hands and feet, vision problems, and episodes of severe pain. The patients want to end superstitions about the disease and stop doctors from pushing harmful practices like bloodletting and concoctions that will supposedly fix their blood. Among the patients here is 26-year-old Hayatu Alimatu, who lost two children to the disease. She came out today with her only surviving child, an 8-year-old girl, who also has sickle cell. Painkillers are expensive, and she hopes to one day take the child to a developed country in the hopes of getting more advanced treatment that could improve her quality of life. She says her daughter normally gets outstanding grades at school, and her average grades are at the top. When she has severe episodes known as crises, her grades drop. Sickle cell anemia affects red blood cells, the cells that carry oxygen throughout the body. Cells that are normally round become hard and look like the C-shaped farm tool called a sickle. They get stuck in blood vessels, causing pain. The cells also die early, causing a constant shortage of red blood cells. 24-year-old Blaise Fora says his hopes of getting married were shattered because he is a sickle cell patient. He says he has decided to remain single because when he fell in love once and was preparing to get married, his fiancée's family was vehemently opposed. They did not want him to, in her words, contaminate their daughter with sickle cell. Fora said the family was concerned that the couple's children might be born with the disease. Those types of concerns are shared by many people, and aid agencies are responding by suggesting couples that are about to marry to get genetic tests done first. Haminatu Hadza Karim from Chad is among those leading the largely informal campaign organized by associations of sickle cell patients. She says many of the women she works with have been thrown out by their husbands for delivering babies with sickle cell. She says she invites other women dealing with these prejudices to join them so they can fight for their rights and eradicate the disease. Some people have the sickle cell trait without having the disease. To pass on the disease to a baby, both parents must be carriers. Dr. Umar Zaki, who takes care of sickle cell patients in Garua, says a lack of genetic counseling means many people are without crucial knowledge.
There are at least 15-25% of the population.
He says the population of Central and West Africa move about with no visible symptoms, but who carry sickle cell genes passed from generation to generation in a pattern of inheritance. The World Health Organization reports that in Cameroon, Gabon, Congo, Ghana, and Nigeria, between 20 and 30% of the population carries the sickle cell trait. In Uganda, more than 40% carry the trait. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garua, Northern Cameroon.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A leading African soccer official has been arrested in France on charges of war crimes committed in the Central African Republic. Prosecutors at the International Criminal Court, the ICC, say Patrice Edouard Ngasona was the most senior leader and national general coordinator of the anti-Balakat militia. The ICC said as the leader of the mostly Christian militia, Ngaisona is suspected of war crimes and crimes against humanity, including murder, extermination, deportation, persecution, torture, attacking civilians, and recruiting child soldiers. The anti-Balakat militia was formed in 2013 to counter the Muslim Seleka rebels who seized control of the Central African Republic's capital, Bangui, and ousted President Francois Bozize. The resulting civil war has killed thousands and displaced hundreds of thousands more. Ngaisona is head of his country's National Soccer Federation. That is it for this Thursday, December 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Nigeria is preparing for general elections in February 2019. President Muhammadu Buhari is running on an ambitious anti-corruption agenda. But opposition leader Atiku Abubakar believes the president has neglected the economy. An in-depth discussion on Nigeria's future.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's worldwide music request hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.